Hi and hello, Watch fans, and welcome to another edition of The Real Time Show with me, your friendly neighborhood watchmaker, Rob Nuss, and the friendly neighborhood jeweler, Alon Ben-Joseph. Today we are joined by the man behind the brand Circular Watches, Cornelius. Welcome to the virtual studio. How are you doing today?
Very good. Thank you for having me. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. Well, nobody ever asks us that. Yeah, we're fine, actually. It's a lovely day here in Dresden. How is it in Amsterdam?
So Amsterdam is good. Thank you for asking. And the cool thing is, Circular is a German brand, but Cornelius is actually in Amsterdam. So how is Amsterdam for you on the other end of the microphone, Cornelius?
We lived here first 5 years in the city center because my wife is Dutch. Then we moved 2 years to Hamburg for our work. And since 3 years, we are back in the Netherlands, in the suburbs of Amsterdam, in Amstelveen, actually, because we have two kids. And then the city just got a little bit too narrow for us. But I love it. I love being here. I love the people. I love not the weather, except today. usually in the south of Germany, it's better. But therefore, you have a lot of other amazing things. One of them is, for example, the Red Bar Amsterdam, where I met you, Alan.
Exactly. And that's a cool anecdote and a good intro into the brand. So one evening of our very fun meetups comes in a guy that speaks way more energy than he's right now. So while I'm talking, Cornelius, maybe grab another coffee and add some whiskey to it, because I want the bubbly Cornelius in the evenings. Big mouth and a perfect blend of German arrogance and Dutch jolliness. So cool guy, funny guy, has a cool watch on his wrist. So we introduced each other and started chatting. He's like, yeah, I have a brand. I'm like, oh, brand, never heard of it. What are you doing in Holland? Are you visiting? No, I live here. So I'm proud to call you a friend by now, because we hung out quite some times, and it's often banter, sometimes serious watch talks, but you actually have an amazing story and journey. So I'm going to shut up. Please all sit back. Rob and I are going to sit back, and Cornelius, give us some energy. Walk us through the history of both Circular, the brand, the family heritage, and you yourself, why you ended up in Holland.
Yeah, just like I said, I came to the Netherlands a couple of years ago, stayed 5 years, 2 years Germany, and now back here due that my wife is Dutch. I met her at my former employer, because I haven't been always in watches, even though my family has always been into watches. But I started as a consultant, and the German company, how would you expect it differently, bought the Dutch company. And then there was a skiing trip, and this is where I met my wife. And then we moved to the Netherlands, because my wife is also very fond of the Netherlands, and it's hard for her to leave. Not that it's speaking that I wanted to leave Germany, but it just developed this way that we landed here. And the kids like it, so we might stay for another couple of years. But the company Circular, this is in Germany, from Pforzheim. And many of you, I guess, know Pforzheim. You two probably have been. Rob, at least, I would think. Alan, maybe as well. Have you been?
Believe it or not, I've never been to Pforzheim. Never.
What? Seriously? Yeah, you live so close to Glass City. Of course, you often go to Glass City, but then the other, so maybe for the ones that don't know, Glass City has always a little bit been more upmarket, and Pforzheim has always been, let's say for the mechanical watches, more the entry level. We have lots of different brands in the city that are popular and known. It's Circular is one of them. We have Laco, we have Aristo, Archimede, and then there is lots of manufacturing companies as well. For example, the cases for Glass City Original are made there, the dials, and lots of different other parts. So it's a watch city for hundreds of years already. And there, my grand-grandfather started a watch wholesale in 1926. And it was called Huber & Co. So it's my last name. And Co. is the short version was in Huco. It's the same as Laco, for example. Laco was founded 1 year earlier in 1925. And it's called Lacher & Co. And the short version is Laco. So we were wholesale for watches in 1926 founded, and it was Hugo Huber & Co. And from this, my grandfather took over. And in the 50s, he thought, okay, I also want to have an own watch brand, not just dealing other watch brands. We used to have Junghans and all the famous Hahnhardt and some Swiss brands, Breitling for some time, that we sold to brick and mortar stores. And then in the 50s, my grandfather said, okay, let's make also our own brand. And that was the birth of Circular. And we have still some nice models from the 50s. They're mostly elegant watches, domed dials, domed crystals, mostly the mineral or plastic. And in the 70s, then my dad got into the company, both into the wholesale as a sales guy, and he took over responsibility over the Circular brand. And then there were already a lots of tool watches, what we're also doing today. So we had, used to be called the field watches, used to be called in Germany Wehrmachtsuhr, which is not a name you should use today anymore. And we had divers, chronos, all sorts of different tool watches. And in 2017, my parents said, okay, look, we want to close down the business and go into our well-deserved pension. What do you want to do? And then I said, okay, I'm not interested in the wholesale. I would be interested, however, in taking over Circular, because then I can also realize my own ideas and build a brand that we already have. That's what was in the family, that my dad did, that my grandfather was responsible for. So this was the right thing for me to do. And then I took Circular over 5 years ago.
So how was it for you to step into a very mature company and take it in your own direction? What were the first things you implemented to make sure that it became your brand rather than just your family's brand?
There were two things very different. So until I got into the company, the major sales channel was brick and mortar stores, so B2B. And this is something that I at least not wanted to have to focus on. We have some dealers still that we work together with, but in the meantime, we do 90% through our own online shop, which was for me then kind of making the brand future ready. But in the end, it does not work without retailers, because Anon knows a word or two about that. It's about a local credibility as well, local networks. And then also the reach for the brand will be with retailers much higher than just online. This is something I underestimated in the beginning. So I'm now really happy that we have this strong online presence. And as a next step, I want to also increase our retail presence. And because in the beginning, when you, it's also contradictory. If you're strong in online and the brand is not very known, you are in a lot of price competition. And this contradicts also a big retail network. In the meantime, the brand is known better. We were able to increase prices. So there is some margin also now we can go into retail networks. And the other part I changed was the designs, especially in the 90s and early 20s, were more generic. They were, so if a guy came to, a customer came into a store, jewelry store, and said, I want to have a watch with a white dial and 12 numbers and a date. And then the guy said, the sales rep said, okay, here, we have a Circular, good quality, German brand, can do nothing wrong with it, and here you have it. And when I took over, then the idea was to make, very unique designs. Was then kind of the rebirth of the brand. So the brand was always there. It never stopped. But it was very different from what we are doing now.
For our dear listeners, if you have the ability to look at the watches on the website, it's circularwatches.com, CIRCULA watches.com. For those that can't have a look while listening, Cornelius, how would you, in an elevator pitch, summarize the brand? So what's your USP? What makes the brand special? Price points? Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, what we do is, it's our slogan. It says three generations making authentic mechanical tool watches in Germany since 1955. That's what we do. We do the real, when you think of German watches, tool watches, solid, sturdy. Some are scratch resistant, anti-magnetic, always solidly built from the case to the bracelet to the movements we use. So we use the Sellita SW200 mostly. In the GMTs, we use the SW330-2 with the 56-hour power reserve. It's also very reliable movements, every well to service, and also service is a good point. It's very important to us. So you get an answer usually on emails during the weekdays. Within 24 hours, we have a chat. You can call us, and there will always be, and we always find good solutions for everybody, for every problem, for every issue. That's what we do.
Price points, what are we talking about? And when you say German, what do you do in-house?
Price points, to start with this one, it starts from around 900 euros and goes up until 1,500 euros. And we do in-house all the quality testing, the assembly, and the regulation. So we fine adjust all movements, and we also pressure test all watches once they are built, in line with to make sure that they really can handle what they are supposed to handle. So, for example, I go regularly to the sauna here, and I go into the 90 degrees, and afterwards directly into the ice water. It's not recommendable to do it because it's tough on the seals, because they always expand and then go together again. And also everything inside is just very, very used when you do this. But I want to test the watches, and I want to break them to extremes. And I'm doing this now with my watches for 2-3 years, and nothing happened so far. This is the quality we want to achieve, and this is what we do in-house. The rest of the components we buy from suppliers.
So how much of the design do you actually do yourself?
This changed over the years. So in the beginning, I did it completely myself. When you look at the Aquasport, it was the Heritage models. That was a fun story. So through my dad, we found some old stock movements from PUW. It's called the Pforzheimer Uhrenrohrwerke. So Pforzheim used to have an own movement factory. And it was it went bankrupt in the 90s, and then the brand and the old machineries got bought by the Swatch Group. So the name is blocked, and you cannot use it anymore. But we found some new old stock, so never used movements in single parts. So we had to build them completely from scratch, and we had them in, let's say, in a design that resembled the first circular watch from the 50s. This was the first one I did completely myself, and with the kind of role model of the first watch from my grandfather. And the next one, the first tool watch, was the Aquasport, a diver, skin diver, 200 meters, good loom, solid watch. I did also the design, but I had some help from a professional diner who made some, let's say, fine tuning. And then with the next one, the Supersport, our real super compressor, it was for me more doing the concept. So I want to say, okay, I want to have a super compressor. I want to have a sandwich dial. I want to have a unique case. Please make me a proposal. And then I had a professional designer who made a really great proposal design, which then in several iterations became the Supersport we know today. And the same happened with the Pro Trail and our Field Watch, anti-magnetic and scratch resistant. And also with the Dive Sport, our 500 meter titanium diver, which also is scratch resistant. This is more like then I do the concept and the general ideas, and then the designer makes a proposal and we go through iterations to finalize the product.
Did you have a background in design from any part of your life? It wasn't what you were doing professionally before, of course, but did you study design as a youth?
No, I studied business. I worked business. But it's different when you grow up with watches. So ever since I was a child, I was surrounded by watches. I never got pocket money. I had to work in the company to earn some money for the weekends. Already from a little, when I was little, from 12, 13, I helped in my parents' company. And I was literally, I was putting the labels on it. And later on, I was on the phone. I was picking the orders. Everything you need to do in a wholesale, I did. And it was always, because I was not so much interested in the jewelry part. My mother made a jewelry part. My dad was the watch guy. So as a boy, I was also drawn to watches and what my dad maybe did. And then you see so many watches, you develop your taste. This is something then, this came through my childhood, not by education.
Talking of models, my favorite is the Pro Trail. You know that whenever you wear it, I always snatch it off your wrist and wear it.
Yeah.
What models do well for Circio? Because you actually have a well-rounded collection, because I also see a Heritage handbound.
Well, I can speak color-wise. It's always the petrol models. So Aquasport, Blue Petrol, Supersport Petrol, Dashboard Petrol, they really sell well. And then we have the Pro Trail Sand, which stands above them all, surprisingly, because, dive watches are the biggest market in the watch industry. And when I was planning the Pro Trail field watch, I got lots of feedback from my, inner circle with whom I challenged my ideas. Yeah, are you sure? Make another diver. It's better. It's more secure. And I said, no, I want to. There needs to be something else in divers in the collection. I want to have a field watch now. And then we came up with the Pro Trail, and it's now our best selling model, especially the Pro Trail Sand with the partly loomed dial. And if you maybe have seen it, it has been featured by Teddy Baldassare also in the meantime twice for the most versatile watch under $1,000. And also in his micro brand, as micro brand of the year list. So this is the most popular watch with journalists, and we also sell it the most.
Very high praise indeed. Tell me this, what's your favorite watch on the market that isn't a circular, and do you have a collection of your own?
I have only a small collection from earlier days, so I have a couple of Orients, which I have from my parents because they had Orient. I have a Junghans, a Flieger Chrono. I have some Casios, Junghans, these sort of models. And whenever my wife asks me what I really like, I like the L'Aventure gold steel. It's a very particular watch, but I love that one. So once there is maybe enough stock and the company doesn't need all my money, this is a watch I would like to wear.
Oh, well, we share that appreciation for L'Aventure, that's for sure. Do you ever look around the industry and see things happening, novelties being released or new technologies being developed, and think that's something I'd like to bring into circular one day?
Yeah, of course. It's different. I can appreciate, for example, when you get the Chris Ward Belcanto, for example. It's really cool to have such a complication at this price point and so readily available. However, this would be nothing I would think would fit to circular, because we have the tool watch focus, and the Belcanto is more elegant complication, let's say. But there are other complications, maybe a jumping hour, or I have a whole list of things I like. But there's often things I would say this is it. And then, for example, for the new watch I designed with Guy. Also, a separate story we can pick up shortly. The one of the role models, or not role models, but inspirations was, and you when I showed you the watch, you directly saw it was the Parmigiani Ferrier, the Tonda PF. So this is also one watch I really like how it looks.
I also adore the Tonda PF. What do you think about its price point, though? Do you think that that puts it on a level that makes it completely inaccessible to a lot of people that would choose that over some more run-of-the-mill fare, like a even something like a Rolex Submariner or a Datejust, because it's a beautiful alternative available in multiple sizes? There is a 36mm version, of course, and I think it could do a great deal of damage to some of the more established brands on the market if it were a bit more affordable.
I looked at it, and I looked it up on Chronos 24. What's the best price model? I think it was kind of €18,000. It's always like that, right? If you go down with the price, you can be more accessible. It's even with us. If you were around about €1,000, when I started the brand, we were around €600. We improved in quality. We improved in movements we use. So it's not just price increases. We improved also what we deliver. Because I believe you cannot just simply increase prices. You also need to increase the proposition. And I want to highlight that design has also value and is part of the proposition. And there is what I learned from the working with Guy. It's also there is luxury design. There is kind of a design that that tells you that the watch is worth more than others. There's generic designs, of course, and there's good design, and there is also a certain design that delivers them a feeling of value. And this is what we try to achieve also with this new watch, to make an extra step to on top of what we already did.
So for our listeners who maybe don't know who we're talking about, this is Guy Bove, or Guy Bove if you prefer. He is a former guest on the Real Time Show, and someone who's a mutual friend to us, of course. Tell us how you got to know Guy and exactly how that relationship progressed.
That was, again, thanks to Alan. When we spent the evenings with the Red Bar crew, yeah, we have good talks always there. And at one point, I don't know how it developed, I asked him, hey, could I maybe come by for 1 or 2 hours and you give me some of your advice? And Alan, as being Alan, always being friendly and supportive, said, of course, come by the store an afternoon and we sit down. So we sat down, I think, 2 hours at least, and we went through the collection. We went through the challenges of making a brand known, to stand out between all these brands that are out there. And at one point, Alan suggested, hey, why don't you work for your next model with Guy Bove? And I asked, why would I do that? And then he said, because he understands contemporary design of sports watches. And I thought, that's what I need. So he got us in contact. And then I had an instant click with Guy. He's an incredibly friendly and humble person. And you know that he has knowledge about watches that I have never experienced before. You can see he studied it. He studied watch design in Switzerland. He worked as creative director for IWC, for TAG Heuer. The experience he has, the knowledge of the market and of the tradition also, of the history of watches, all combines into a source of amazing knowledge about watches and design and how they should look. And this is how we got started on the new model.
For our listeners that haven't heard the episode with Guy Bove, because he has basically two names, Swiss call him Guy, and his name is Guy. Indeed, a true gentleman, a true expert, a philosopher even, and he's a true designer. He doesn't only do watches. Episode 93, or just Google Guy Bove and the Real Time Show. You'll find it either on your podcast platform or on our website. So we're leapfrogging maybe, but it's a very interesting question. What happened to you as a brand owner? And you are a watch designer because you've designed watches, working with such a master. I wouldn't even dare to call him a genius. Well, what did it do to you as a person, a business owner, a watch designer?
When you get exposed to so much knowledge and experience, you get more humble about yourself and where you stand, maybe. So I thought, hey, we put out a real nice collection lineup of watches. They work well. They sell well. But in the end, we can do even better. And this is what I then instantly had in the feeling with him, that when we work together, we can bring it to the next level, not just in watch design. As you said, he can do anything. So I thought, let's think about everything. So in the progress of designing the watch, he came up and said, I said, yeah, I'm also busy doing a new logo. And I worked together with a logo designer, a professional logo designer. And the result was not really what I wanted to. And he became kind of an advisor or consultant to me in all topics. So I showed him the new logo. He said, not for me. And I also wasn't really convinced. So in the end, he just, as a byproduct, without charging extra for it, he invented or designed a new logo for Circular, which I loved immediately, because he doesn't only put the logo in front of you, he tells you a whole story of how he came to it. So for example, I can spoil that already. The new logo will have capitals with an I. The I from Circular will be small caps. Just to separate the C and the rest from each other. And because if you look at, it's no secret, if you look at in forums, there's often the joke, especially in America, Circular, haha, Dracula. So in order to get this connection away, the I is now small cap I, and it works 100%. And additionally, he is very fond of typefaces. So he said, how about making a new typeface? So we have now our own typeface in line with the logo. And on the new watch, there will be the numbers will be our own typeface, and on the case back will be our own typeface. And we will also use it for press releases and for our website. So there's much more going on than just a new watch. And it continues then with the packaging. So the new watch will be 38 millimeter steel sports watch with the La Chouperet movement, below 10 millimeters high. And it will be very faceted from the case design and from the bracelet. And we will have then also the fitting box for it, which also is designed by Guy, and which also looks, in my opinion, amazing.
That's an amazing story, because I actually did not receive the debriefing completely on this case study. I did speak to a guy on a totally different subject, so he slightly told me a bit about this. You told me a little bit about this because we didn't have time during the last Red Bar Crew meeting. I actually never got that word joke on Dracula, because the first thing I've asked you, you have the most amazing brand name, although it's from the 50s, but it's so relevant today that it's modern, because for me, Circular is, hey, sustainability. What do you do about sustainability with the brand? Because I guess somebody who starts today and wants to create a sustainable watch brand would have made up maybe Circular. So since I asked you that already off mic, I'll do it again. You can now reverse engineer and load the brand. Is it a topic for you and your buyers, your fans?
It's a topic for me. I think it's indeed less a topic for buyers. Was it in our Red Bar group where we had this poll? Is it? I think so, right? We had it in the Red Bar WhatsApp group. I don't know how many people, but above 100 only watch fans. And there was a poll: is it important to you, and is it buying decisive? And many people said it is important to me, but it doesn't really influence my buying decision. And this is how I feel it as well. Nobody asks me about it, and it's not out there. But I think, and this came also from the discussion we two had, you can make a difference in awareness if you actively market it. So we started now to work on it. For example, the box of the new that Guy is designing right now will be made of recycled PET bottles. And the straps will be from no chemicals leather. So that is that we have more sustainability in all parts. And then I've also set out an agenda for the coming years to make every year one big step. So for this year, it's the boxing. Next year, we try then to make everything plastic free. And then we continue with that we have climate neutral production and these things. So I've set out an agenda for myself or for Circular that we every year we make one big step so that in 2030 everything is from recycled materials and carbon neutral.
Now that you did a holistic 360 approach with Gaibo, are you addicted or is it a one-time thing? Will you work more with him? Will you work with more star designers like him?
Yeah, for now, I am a little bit hooked onto him because it's such a trustful relationship and I love the results that come out. So, because I also changed for this new project, for this new watch, we went to a new supplier, just a Swiss company, and who does cases and bracelets on... on a different level even. So it's not only what we change now, not only the design, the movement, also the finishing will be next level for this new watch. And then because with a new company, new manufacturer, it is always take some time in the beginning to negotiate, to set up, to make the toolings, to make the samples. So this new watch I did with Guy will not come before early October. And then I thought, okay, but I need something in the first half year. So I asked Guy, hey, I want to do a pilot watch. It's missing in the collection. And knowing all my local competitors, so they are all known for pilot watches, the German Flieger. But they all do the classic designs. Stova is also from Pforzheim, Laco, Archimede, they all do the classic Flieger design. So I said, let's do a modern pilot's watch. And Guy designed the hands, the dial, the crown, the case back. And we put it on the mid case of the Pro Trail, but with all the elements of a Flieger.
That's awesome to hear.
In the end, I like to be part of this community, and I am. We are all on the same watch shows. We just been to Washington, which was a great show. I'll be on all three windups in San Francisco, Chicago, New York, in Toronto. It's always the same guys you meet. It's a really cool community. But on the other side, the micro brand, especially word in Germany, is not very popular because I think Germans, they want to have stability and security, especially from their favorite watch brand. So I would rather say that okay, we are independent, but in the micro brand community.
What's your definition of a micro brand? Because it seems that nobody has a clear cut definition. It same goes for the term manufacture in watchmaking. Some brands get pissed off when you call them a micro brand. Some take it as an heroic title. So how do you perceive that?
In the end, it's all about volume, about employees. And so, but I would say it's a brand that's overly depending on its founder and owner. Mostly in a sense that if the founder and owner would leave the company, it doesn't exist anymore, which is not a good thing indeed. And this is where most micro brands, including us, kind of struggle to make the next step, to make it independent of its owner. And I hope that this year, because I have at least all the processes written down, so if I would, I don't know, fall off a cliff, somebody else could step in and take over Circular, because also we have a network of watchmakers in Pforzheim. My dad and my mother, they work, they also, they take salaries. They just work because I work with them because I can 100% trust them, and I'm sitting here in the Netherlands and the company is in Southern Germany. So it's good that family is doing it there, but it's not a solution that will continue forever. So in the end, I think this next year will be very decisive that we get to a point where it's not only dependable on the Hugo family, but also a wider structure.
That's a really interesting definition of micro brand. I have sought long and hard for a clean, reliable, consistent definition of a micro brand, a small independent, a large independent, and a group brand. And some of those are easier than others, obviously, and the hardest seems to be getting between a small independent and a micro brand. Like, what differentiates the two? And we often talk about B2B or B2C being an important factor in those things. We talk about product design being derivative or otherwise as another factor. But I've never heard anyone say a brand that is overly reliant on the founder or the face of the brand. And I think it's really good. Again, it's a difficult definition because how do you quantify over-reliance on someone and something? But it's great to have that in mind as you try and deepen the roots of Circular in the industry to establish it as a more independent entity separate from the Huber family. What do you hope the company will look like in not just 1 year, but say 5 years in the future? Do you expect there to be a huge amount of retailers globally? Do you expect to have expanded the collection or maybe even have shrunk it down to something else? Do you expect to step up the price point and bring in new complications? What's your vision for that medium term?
Yeah, interesting you're asking, because just this week I had, I sat down and I used to be a consultant, I still work in PowerPoint. So I put out my vision for the collection, and it could go two ways. And it's good, from my opinion, you never know what a collection will develop, because you don't know what's actually successful. If the new watch that I designed with Ski is very successful, we will build from this steel sports watch. We will make maybe a titanium model. We will make a diver of it, a GMT. Maybe this becomes the core. That would be one way. And then we could have, let's say, that it's called the facet, the new model. That could be one string. And then we have the current string in watches that are more in the premium with the Salita movement. So we could build it maybe on a basis of the Pro Trail. You could also make a diver. You could make the pilot's watch, a sports watch. So this could be one string. And then there could also be a completely different string of how it develops, maybe the more affordable models around 1,000, because the new watch will be more around 2,000 euros. Will be more the core. So it depends on what is actually successful in the collection, where it will develop. But it will always be in this sports tool corner, and it will have a couple of foundations around which we will build the watch. And if we talk about retailers, my objective is never to have... for example, like there's a brand, Bruno Söhne, they have 800 retailers in Germany. That is not my objective. I would like to have a couple selected, ideally people I like, because I did this. I also, one of the motivations was to get out of consulting, was of course to work with watches, because I love watches and I grew up with them. The other motivation was I wanted to work with people I like, that I can select the people I work with. And this is always one of my major criteria. I would not work or do something with somebody I have not a good click, which is absolute luxury, but I enjoy it. And then I would love to have a couple of retailers all around Germany, maybe, I don't know, 20, 30, and in Europe, 50, I don't know. That's kind of where I would love to be.
The first time I encountered a circular watch on somebody's wrist was on Banu Chopra's wrist, at the Micro Praha event where we met for the first time, actually last December. And having seen the watch in person, it changed my perception of the brand entirely. I was amazed at the quality you were able to achieve at that price point. Also because of the movement that was powering proceedings, I thought it was a really, really great watch. I loved the straps, the Velcro straps just for comfort and also the way that you got the colors to match the dials so well. That made a big impression on me, seeing it on his wrist. A writer, an editor that I really respect, somebody who's a known figure within the industry. Do you plan on working directly with more, let's say, influencers? I'm not sure if Banu would define himself as an influencer, but he obviously is in the practical application of the word. Someone like him, you've already had good comments from Teddy, of course. Is that something you're keen to do? And do you plan on having more media partnerships in the future to just expand the reach of the brand?
It's funny, when you ask me this, the first thing that popped into my mind was my discussion with Alon. He said to me, look, the German market is very peculiar market. And all these things that you ask me, we're already doing in Germany. It's just the German market is kind of gated or fenced. What we do there is not visible internationally. So that's very different from a brand like Christopher Ward from the UK. If they do something locally, because most of their local UK-based influencers, they have a global reach. German, even the Netherlands, look at the platforms here, Monochrome, Fratello, they have a global reach. We don't have this in Germany. The guys we work with, for example, Uhrenratgeber is the biggest German YouTuber. He has 60,000 followers. That's in German language. Nobody outside of Germany even knows that guy. And again, then you have in Germany, at least that I see it, we don't have these known industry figures on, let's say, in my price bracket, right? If you take Banu, he's living in Prague, but he's internationally known. He worked for Revolution and for What You Seek. And there's a whole different network. Or take you, for example, Rob, you are similar. You are worldwide known and have a worldwide network. For us Germans, it's often different. We are kind of locally, but the German market is the advantage of it is a very big market. So if we do our German marketing, we have a very, very solid base, which I am really happy for. But in the end, yes, I also want to work with more known internationally influencers, but it comes only. And this is something I learned in the beginning. I wanted to force it. I wanted to push it. I wrote those guys and I called them and I, hey, what do you think? And then they just don't get back to you. Just when you, it's kind of a step-by-step approach. Once one guy knows you, talks about you, the next one sees you and asks and says, oh, wait, you wrote me an email 3 years ago and then comes back to me. And then, so it's nothing I can particularly force, but the network is just developing over time, and with more that the brand gets more known, it's kind of self-fueling.
My question was to you, what are your biggest challenges as a watchmaker? You're not per se assemble the watch, but you are a watch brand owner, entrepreneur. So you just gave one of the maybe complications of owning a brand. What other things do you find very difficult?
In owning a brand, difficult is a lot the stock management, because we are in an industry where you prepay everything what you manufacture. So before the watch launches on the market, I have paid everything in full. And then you sell what you have on stock differently than you anticipated, which increases your stock over time automatically. And it's then you need very good cash management. Where I'm lucky enough, I'm pretty skilled in this through my old work. So, but in the end, it's a challenge to keep the stock at a reasonable level and not having it grow every year, because in Germany it is, if you have stock growth, you need to pay tax on it because it's basically a profit. And then I have the cash bound in the stock and I need to pay tax on it, which is ridiculous. So this is really, let's say, a very technical challenge. And the next challenge is then, of course, the reach. How can you stand out between 10,000 other brands? That's the current other very big challenge.
taking these challenges to advice, what would you give as advice to either girls and boys that just started a watch brand or are aspiring to start a watch brand?
First of all, if you want to do it, do it. It's a busy market, but if you love it, and because you often read, don't do it, it's difficult. And yeah, of course it's difficult, but it's a great community. It's a lot of fun. It's emotions. It's something you have with you every day. It's, for me, one of the best markets you can be active in. So if you want to do it, do it. And then something very difficult for me, patience, because it needs often patience. There's always these examples that have it right from the beginning, and they make it through the roof start and become popular right away. But it is only per year, I would say, a handful of brands. And then there are the normal brands that develop over time steadily. And it's very motivating to have steady growth every day, every week, every year. This is also part of the motivation. If you grow, it gives you a lot of energy to continue. And then in the end, you will make it. It just needs patience.
Well, fine words, absolutely. And I think a good spot to end the show on, because we hope to have you back on air very soon with us, Cornelius. And we will reveal more about that next episode to our listeners in the coming weeks. Right now, I say thank you for your time, and thank you to Alon as always. If you'd like to get in touch with us, if you have any questions for Cornelius, or if you have any questions that you'd like us to chuck in the mailbag and answer on a future Q&A session, then please do reach out either via our Instagrams, either at @robnudds for me, at @alonbenjoseph for Alon, or at @davaucher for David, who will be back on air with us soon. You can contact us via email, either Rob or Alon at therealtime.show, or via the contact form on the website, www.therealtime.show. Until next time, stay safe and keep on ticking.